I never told no one that. My whole life I've been holding back. Every time I load my gun up so I can shoot for the stars, I hear a voice like, who do you think you are?
All right, another day, another dollar, another Wednesday of my favorite podcast. Yeah, I'm always biased. It's my podcast, What If It Did Work? Here, I'm honored to have a return guest. He's actually, Mike, did you know you're only the second person to come back onto my show?
I did not know that, but yeah. I am super honored. And I know what that means to bring someone back on. You have to like them.
I love you. When they said, would you like the opportunity? I'm like, hell yeah. And this is all about Mike. Mike Simmons, speaker, coach, founder, seven-figure investor, shared the stage with Gary Vee, Ryan Serhant, Jocko Willink, Russell Brunson, Walter Bond, Andy Frisella, Tom Ferry, among others. Mike is the owner of a successful real estate investing company and partner in one of the country's largest real estate mastermind companies. He specializes in helping entrepreneurs create systems, processes, and automations that allow them to work on their business and not be a slave to it. Amen. He has personally worked with hundreds of entrepreneurs to help them optimize and grow their business. Mike is the producer and host of his own online show called Just Start Real Estate and has conducted over 350 interviews with entrepreneurs who run 6, 7, and 8-figure businesses. Mike is also a husband and father, 2 daughters and 1 son residing in Michigan. Mike is always looking for a reason to escape the cold weather and get to a beach. Welcome back, brother.
Thanks for having me, man. I appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
No problem, man. And it's crazy. But, you know, we're back here with similar circumstances. We actually fired our former publicist. We're going solo because, and here, you're going to agree with this. Everything you have to do, you have to do it. Am I right or am I wrong?
Yeah, I think I've learned this lesson a few times in my business over the years. And I, you know, it's like life is all about learning and sometimes being retaught the same lesson when you forget. And that lesson is no one cares about your business like you do. And you cannot hand the keys to a big chunk of your success to somebody else and expect them to perform. It happens, I suppose, but that's not a winning formula. Every time I've given over a lot of control of the success or failure of something that I'm doing, it hasn't ended well. So I know that I'm ultimately responsible, right? We have to take that responsibility and kind of do it ourselves in a lot of cases.
I agree. But when I did own my businesses, and if I gave complete control to my general manager, anything happened, it was still ultimately to me.
Yeah.
And that's why, you know, yeah, that's all in our past, our publicists or whatnot. But bottom line, it's not their fault. It's our fault. And successful people always say, hey, bottom line, it's me. And I when you said you wasted, we're not wasted because it was a lesson. It was a long-term lesson. Yeah. It was like 2 semesters long for some people,
exactly.
3 semesters.
Exactly.
Me, it was like paying University of Miami, paying private school. And I learned a valuable lesson. And also only you and I, we know our strengths way more than someone else. And no, why paint yourself different? I mean, I know what my superpowers, what my strengths are. The same with you. We connect because we're like-minded people. Now, if somebody wants to paint us different, Howard Schultz is successful because he's Howard Schultz. He's not trying to be Warren Buffett. Warren Buffett is trying to be just himself. And that's the one thing. You crush it in real estate. You're not chasing people like their money.
Yeah.
And a ways to a means. You're not living in scarcity. You want abundance. You want both parties. You want to cut people's time. You want to help people succeed when it comes to real estate. Because, you know, if you go in there without knowing what you're doing, you're going to lose your ass off.
Totally. And I think the difference is some people are okay with collecting a check and not performing. And other people like you and I, if someone pays us to do something, we want to over-deliver. Like I want to over-deliver. I don't even necessarily just want to meet the minimum requirements for what I was asked to do or paid to do. I want to over deliver. And I, you know, unfortunately, I was having this conversation today with my executive assistant. I said, it's unfortunate, but the one of the lessons that I continuously see out there is it's a rare thing that a company or a person makes a promise, collects payment, and then delivers in full. It just seems like a lot of people are comfortable being very transactional. And that's the difference. A transactional thinker thinks, I'm going to get paid right now, and then that's all I care about is that one-time payment. But people who have long-term thinking, who are ultimately successful and very wealthy, think of relationships as a lifelong thing, or a very long-term relationship where it's not just about getting paid right now and then turning the page to the next person who will give you a payment. Like that's very transactional, and it doesn't work long-term, unfortunately. And so you have to think long-term.
And that's what, you know, that's why I love about you, because I'm the same way. I can be on a date, and if one of my business clients has a problem, has an issue, and he or she is texting me, I'm not saying, well, that's not in our contract. It's like what you say. You want everybody to win.
Yeah.
A lot of people under promise, over deliver. Why? Why not over promise, over deliver, create raving fans? No, I'm not here until the next of the month, the 15th or whatever. And hope that we have another month. I want you to win. Mike, I know you feel the same way. You want people to be on your program, not because, hey, one and done, and have that empty feeling, having the walk of shame with their head down. You know, it's Saturday morning. It's Sunday morning. The walk of shame back to the car. Because in this business, holy smokes, man. And I'm sure you've had this. I've had so many mentors that they look at everybody like they're a checking account. It's like, don't call me Omar Medrano. Just call me JP Morgan.
Yeah.
And just call me when the check hits. And then when the contract's due, you know, bye, see ya, ghost, a complete ghost.
Totally. Yeah, 100%, man. I couldn't have said it better. It's just that transactional thinking, that ATM mentality. It's so short term. It's so short sighted. And just like even to bring us down to like a local, like real estate level, there are people in my market doing what I do, and they're so transactional. They don't care to burn bridge. They'll burn a bridge on every single transaction because they just don't care, and they're soon out of business. And so, you know, reputation matters. I think people's word should mean something, and it just, unfortunately, it doesn't. And so what that means is the bar is set so low for you and me and other people who have this attitude that we want to over-deliver, that if you just barely deliver, you're kind of ahead of most people, like, because most people just don't deliver, unfortunately. And so if you over-deliver, you are a unicorn, and you will create raving fans. So it's not like you have to 10x your promise. You just meet your promise and you're ahead of most people. But if you can exceed it by some measure, you know, you are a unicorn and you're something special. And that's unfortunate, but it's good for us who deliver, right?
Well, it's like what Howard Schultz says. Howard Schultz, the reason why they have raving fans, it's not the coffee. And we'll say it, I'm not in the coffee business. He's in the customer service. He's in the people business. And you're right. When I answer a DM, I answer a call, I answer a text, or I'm like, hey, let's do another Zoom. But it's not never, well, hey, you know, the contract states every other week. Let's just wait. No, yeah. Because I would feel like I'm robbing from somebody. If I promise them something and it's like, oh, well, maybe we'll hit our target next month, and then the fall. No, let's do it now. It's never lower the target. It's always increase the outcome. It's a we mentality, you know. And I know you feel the same way. If somebody's like, okay, well, 11 months in, you know, your program, 7-figure real estate investing in 12 months. I know you're going to be like, man, I'm going to make sure this guy wins. He wins, I win, we all win.
Totally. Yeah, 100%. 100%, man. It's just, you know what, So when you help someone succeed, that's good news, right? But you know what travels faster and has a bigger impact than good news? Bad news, right? You don't perform, you don't do what you say you're going to do, you don't bring the results that you promise. That news will come out way faster than all the good things you did, right? So, you know, it's like, I want to make sure people succeed, but I also have the same passion to not let people fail under my watch, right? I want them to succeed for sure, but I sure as heck don't want them to fail because I don't want that on my ledger. I want my ledger to be clean. And I want to know that, but listen, you've worked with folks, I work with folks, you know, and I know that sometimes it's not what you didn't do for them. It's what they don't believe in themselves. It's limiting beliefs. It's maybe they just didn't have that work ethic it takes. Everyone will not succeed. It's just, there's no 100% success formula when it comes to success for individuals that you're helping. But what I want to make sure I do is eliminate all the excuses, all the reasons, and give them all the tools and more. And at some point, people just have to put in the work. But I can't let it be on my side of the equation why they didn't succeed. And so I do the same thing. I meet with people extra, more than I'm commissioned to meet with them. I go above and beyond. I reach out to people randomly that pay me for coaching or come to me for help. I reach out to them randomly. Just go, hey, how's the day going? Are you getting things done? Like, do you need anything else from me? That kind of stuff goes a long way. And that's, you know, kind of more about coaching and things like that. But even in real estate, if we have a lead or a seller who needs to sell and we know they're hurting, but they just can't, for whatever reason, pull the trigger when we're in the home, we're following up with them. And not because we want a payday, but because we know they need help and we know we can help them. And so we reach out and just make sure people nothing's changed. They don't need us. And we go above and beyond because that's just how you should do business.
Mike, limiting beliefs. I hit them all the time. I'm sure you have this. You have a client that'll tell you, you know, there's just no properties out there. I've traveled 2 to 3 counties and it's scarce, Mike. Maybe in your neck of the woods, but where I'm located, things are different, man. There's just no real estate available here.
Yeah. Well, first of all, you know, this is silly. I know, you know, but here's why in real estate, single family homes I'm talking about now. Here's why people sell to us. They sell to us because they've had a divorce, they've had job loss, they've had job transfer because of death, downsizing, deferred maintenance, the house has too much going on, they can't afford to fix it. There's a million reasons why people sell to us, right? All of those things. Do you think that death, divorce, job loss, job transfer, downsizing, deferred maintenance, none of those are really economically driven, maybe job loss, maybe, right? But most of the reasons why we buy houses from people are independent of house prices, interest rates, and the market. It's just life events. So life happens in every market, right? And the other thing is I just have too much access to too many people in various states around the country that are killing it. Right. So you name a state you're in and you tell me or a part of a state that you can't find deals, I will produce somebody who's crushing it in that area. And there's no loss of deals. There's no lack of deals. I've been doing this since 2008. So I went through that whole crash in 2008. I went through when house prices are rising. We just had a super hot market that we came out of where house prices were like crazy high. That was that's the hardest time, in my opinion, as an investor to find deals, to buy deals, is in the hottest of markets, right? So when realtors are telling you the market's great or when realtors are crushing it, that's when it typically gets hard for a real estate investor to get great deals because as an investor, a good deal for me means I'm getting it at under market value, right? I have to get a deal. There has to be room in there to make money. And so how do you get a property under market value when the media and the realtors around you are all screaming your house is worth an all-time high? Your house has never been more valuable than it is right now. Everyone's killing it, above offers. People are just waiving contingencies, all this stuff, right? It's like the hottest of hot. How do you buy houses in that market? Well, I did. I had my best year ever, the first year of COVID, when house prices were going up like crazy. I had my best year ever in my business. It's not about the market. And when people like, so I point to this book a lot. It's called Extreme Ownership, Jocko Willink, right? In my intro, you mentioned that I shared the stage with him. Not only did I share the stage with him, I had dinner next to him. It was a group of people, but I was sitting next to him at dinner, and I had a whole day workshop with him and his team going over this concept of extreme ownership. And so what people lack sometimes in why they're struggling, it's not because the market has shifted one way or the other, interest rates have gone up, we're in a recession, none of that. It's because they're looking for something to blame that isn't them. It can't be them, so let's just find what it is, right? Everyone's saying the market's, you know, going down, interest rates are going up. Okay, that's why I can't find deals. Untrue. It's totally untrue. There's nothing stopping. Matter of fact, getting deals is getting easier. Finding deals now is easier than it was a year ago. It's easier than it was 2 years ago, and it's going to get easier, in my opinion, because the last people to accept that market, that prices are falling, are the consumers, the sellers. They're the last people to accept that, right? But the media is already telling them that the market's cooling, the market's going down, house prices are dropping. I can see it. Everyone can see it. Just go on Zillow, for that matter, and look at your house price versus 6-8 months ago. It's gone down, right? So when prices are dropping, consumer panic sets in, and the media starts telling you that your house is worth less than it was 6 months ago, and it's going to be worth less than 6 months probably. And that's when, as investors, it gets easier for us to buy. I expect that the complaint or the excuse for people in the coming months is going to be, I'm having a hard time selling the house once I buy it and renovate it or whatever you're doing to it. I'm having trouble selling it. That's going to be the new complaint. But honestly, 3 years ago, we're kind of in a similar market that we were in about before COVID, right? We're in a similar market now. Nobody was saying they couldn't buy or sell houses. Everything was fine. But now that we're going back to it, everyone's freaking out. We had this accelerated sort of anomaly explosion in the market. You can't look at that and say, well, because we're not in this anomaly anymore, things are hard. No, we just went back to normal. This is sort of, we sort of normalized again a little bit. How interest rates going up is a different factor, but irregardless, we sort of normalized. And the bottom line is, in real estate, you just have to know where the market is. It's not bad. It's not good. I think I might have said this last time I was on. The market's not out to get you. It's not this monster that jumps out of the closet every couple of years to ruin your business. You just have to understand what's happening in the market and adjust your approach accordingly. A year ago, it was all about how do we talk to sellers and how do we position ourselves in a way that we're able to help them and still get the house at a price that makes sense for us? That was the struggle. The new struggle is going to be, once we get that contract with the seller and we buy the house and we renovate it, how do we educate, how do we talk to the buyer, the end buyer, to make them understand that, you know, what the house is worth now because house prices are going down, right? It's just a lot of real estate is relationships, and how do you talk to either sellers, buyers, or whoever you're talking to? How do you talk to them in the environment you're in right now to get what you need done for your company and to help them, right? Because the bottom line is, I'll guarantee you this, every year that I've been in business, I have taken video testimonials from sellers who are hugging us, kissing us on the cheek, telling us that we were sent from God, we answered their prayers. Why would they do that if deals are not out there now? How could we possibly get these kind of testimonials from raving sellers that love us? It's because there's always sellers out there that need us. They need to sell to us. Traditional house selling strategies like the MLS and realtors, it doesn't work for everybody. It's just not a fit for everybody. It doesn't solve their problem. And so the problems that they have are still out there. They're going to be out there in 6 years. They're going to be out there in 2 decades. And they're out there now. And they'll always be out there. You just have to find those people who are motivated to sell and have real issues, real challenges, and solve their problems. And you'll find deals. There's deals everywhere. People who say they can't find deals, unfortunately, my brain says they're not motivated. Like, they're not serious about their business, or they would do it. You know, the test I like to give people is, if you have kids and I kidnapped your kids and said, you'll get them back when you get a deal. They'd find a deal. They would find one. They would get one, right? So it's not that they can't, it's that they don't want to bad enough. It's not a bad enough need for them. So,
well, I tell people, you'll find success, you'll win, when you treat it like it's your next breath of air. Yeah, like you're 100%. Underwater. Trust me, you're going to do whatever it's necessary. When somebody's like, I really can't sell anything. Oh, yes, you can. If the thing is, people are in comfort. man, if your back is up against the wall or like intaken, you need to do whatever means necessary to get your kids back, you'll do it. It's just we're lazy in general. It's easier to come up with an excuse. It's easier to be a victim. It's easier to say, well, you know, it's timing. It's the market, the interest rates. It's always easier to point to so many different variables than anything, except it's so much harder to go have that finger pointed at yourself, looking yourself in the mirror and saying, I am the reason for all my problems.
Yep. The biggest social cancer in our country is the victim mentality. It's the worst. I see it everywhere. And I have kids, and I definitely try to make sure that they don't look at themselves or the world like that. Like they're being victimized. Nobody's being victimized by the world. I mean, there are certain people that are certainly victims in certain cases, but I'm just saying in general, the world is not victimizing you. You're allowing yourself to be a victim. And when people say they can't find deals, what they really mean is, like you said it, it's not easy enough for me. Right? It's not that they can't. It's just not easy enough for them. They want it to be easier. They don't want to work hard enough to do it. So anybody who tells me that they can't do something like find deals, my brain just says they're looking for an easy way to find deals. And I don't like working with people like that. I just don't. I just know they're always going to fail because they want to be a victim.
Well, it's laziness at its peak to say, well, I don't want to work. Well, yeah. Clearly, if somebody could just like wire transfer me $1 million a month, you know, all my problems, I'm on easy street. That's not how life works. And playing the victim has just been amplified. I mean, it's been a process since, you know, the millennials and Gen Z. But man, kick up social media and I can have my platform. I can post how much of a victim I am. I can get cyber hugs. Oh, yeah. Instantaneously, oh, man. I can feel it.
People love putting their arms around you when you play the victim. And that's why people do it, right? They like the feeling of that, you know, somebody sort of giving them that cyber hug or whatever you said. Like, unfortunately, that's why I'm always amazed. My wife and I talk about this all the time, and I don't know if you feel the same way or if you see this. I'm always amazed of people who go like on Facebook and they'll start airing their dirty laundry of their marriage or their relationship with their kids or their parents or whatever. Like they'll start talking intimately about what's going wrong in their life. The only thing I can guess is they really get some sort of a charge out of people sympathizing with them and sort of enabling that behavior, because my gosh, going on social media just to say how bad your relationship with your husband or your wife is, I'm blown away by that. I'm continuously shocked when people do that. But some people love being a victim. They just love it. It's comforting to them.
Oh, Mike, that's the majority. That's the masses. After I got divorced and the woman I started dating, she had to post pictures of us dating. People that were only friends with me on social media or associates, I didn't know you were going through marital problems. I didn't know you were going through a divorce. Why didn't you post it? Why didn't you tell everybody? And it's like, what is this? The people's court? Is my drama here to amuse people? No. And I keep everything private. My dating life, I'll post pictures of my kids and their accomplishments. I guess I want my fraternity brothers. I want to see people that I grew up with and vice versa. Our kids, but man, who cares? What's that going to solve? That's just going to solve that you're unhinged. That's going to show that, you know, you're dysfunctional. We all have issues. Keep it locked up. What's it going to do? Was Dr. Ruth going to give me free therapy sessions? Was the world's therapist? Was everybody? No, we all have. When somebody posts their stuff, okay, you get that cyber hug, you get that, oh, shucks, for a second. But guess what? They go back into their own world, their own problems. Everybody has their own problems and issues. Yep. They'll quickly forget about yours. In fact, though, people will think less and less of you if all of a sudden, oh, one month, this is your soulmate. And next month you're like, oh my gosh, you know, relationship status complicated.
Totally complicated. That's so funny. Yeah. The last person to know if I have a marital issue will be social media. That's the last thing I'll do is post it on social media. You'll never know if you're looking on social media for that stuff. I think sympathy is, it's interesting that we're going down this path because I do feel actually pretty passionate about this subject. It's not just something I'm discussing because you brought it up. Like I could talk about this all day, honestly. I do think that sympathy is probably, it's one of the worst crutches or it's almost like a drug, I think, that people sort of like, it's like morphine that people just sort of hit it to feel a little bit better. They put something on social media. Oh, my, you know, my marriage is crumbling or whatever. I'm unhappy. Whatever they're saying, they just like get that little dose of morphine where it makes them feel a little better because people rush in and, oh my gosh, you don't deserve this. You're so much better than that. I'm praying for you. Like it's nice that people do that. I mean, what else could people do, frankly, if you put that on social media? Like, it's almost you're compelled to say, yeah, I'm really sorry to hear that. But putting it on there and looking for that kind of confirmation, it's not helpful. It's not. It's just not helpful. When things go wrong, you said you have kids. When things go wrong for them, I don't know how old they are, but if they, you know, have a boyfriend that breaks up with them or a girlfriend or they don't make a sports team and they get cut or whatever it is, sitting there and saying, oh, this is horrible. Oh, I feel so bad for you. Oh, it's so terrible. Like, you're hurting them. If that's what you do as a parent, you are absolutely hurting them. You're making them, you're giving them an addiction to something that will be harmful to them for the rest of their life. And you don't have to be mean and say, hey, man, you got cut from the team because you weren't good. Like, you're no good. Like, obviously, that's the opposite extreme. But being a little bit more constructive about it, like saying, hey, you got cut. It stinks. Let's move on. Work harder. Let's figure out how we can get you better so you can make the team next year. Or the girlfriend broke up with you. Hey, man, it happens. Like, it's terrible, but you got to move on and turn the page. You're 18, you're 17, you're 12, whatever it is, right? Like, you've got to help them move past it and be stronger for it. Not sympathize all day long. Like, sympathize for like a second. I hear you. I see it. I know it's hurting you. I feel bad that happened, but here's what we'll do to help fix the problem and go forward. People who just want sympathy endlessly, there aren't somebody to tell them how bad it is and how much they feel bad for them. Gosh, are you just crippling that person? You're just feeding them morphine and you're not helping them. And it's terrible. Mike,
that's why one of the only things my ex and I do agree on is since we were both in business and personal development, when it comes to our daughters, 17 and 15, it's always get up, dust yourself off. Life isn't fair. What are you going to do about it? We put them in travel soccer. One still plays. The other has a torn ACL. And it wasn't because, oh, my kids are going to be the next Mia Hamm, the next this. They're going to be scholarship offers. No, it's about competition. It's about real world lessons. It's not about, hey, we came close. It's about winning.
Yep.
You did something bad, sit on the bench. You want more play time, you have to earn it. It's not, well, hey, everybody plays, everybody sings Kumbaya. No, you hate your teammate. Well, that's the real world. That's going to be your coworker. You hate 100%. Your boss. Well, who's your coach? You better become an entrepreneur then. Plain and simple. Totally. Life lessons. So yeah, if my oldest only made junior varsity, JV, sophomore last year. She's a junior. She's on the varsity team this year. She was coming off a broken foot. It wasn't like, oh my gosh, what? Maybe we can talk to the coach. Can you do it? No.
All right.
Like, play your butt off, you know, learn from it, move on. And that's all you can do. But yeah, that's that mentality of I need to keep them safe by, you know, that's the reason why you see these people now posting, you know, oh my gosh, I hate my boss, or oh, Mercury is into my retrograde, and all these other things. The first couple of times I had to hear it, I'm not gonna lie, I had to Google to see what that meant, because I would see people post it, and it's like, man, get up, you control your destiny, and no horoscope. There's nobody, the man, you know, everybody right now, elect, the election is important. No, it's not, man. What's important is how you live your life, the choices you make. I'm 49. I've lived under a Democratic controlled House and vice versa, both Republican president. It's all up to me. Unless I'm trying to get an ambassadorship, unless I'm trying to get a cabinet position, unless I'm a lobbyist, that's not going to affect me. And it's not going to affect other people. But, you know, any little thing, you know, let's watch the news. What's the newest pandemic? So I can blame my life on that.
I know. So true. I don't want to get too polarizing here, but I'll tell you one thing. You hit on something that is sort of a little bit of a secret weapon for me when I hire. And I know I can't base it on this, but it factors in, right? When you're hiring people, there has to be certain things that you use to weigh your decision. And something that is always a check in the positive column for me is when someone tells me that they played sports competitively, either in high school, college is great. You know, I find athletes to be people who typically don't play the victim. They understand that, you know, you have to be accountable. You have to, sometimes it's a team effort. It's not all about you. Like, I like that. When someone tells me they played competitive sports, I get kind of excited, and it's a check in the box, a positive box for me. It's huge. People who get wrecked by the slightest somebody says something about them on social media, or someone doesn't address them with the right pronoun, and that wrecks their day. Like, I know these are people that are easily knocked off course. Like, they're not going to succeed if they let the smallest of things just wreck their day, you know, just wreck it. You've got to be able to move on.
Mike, all my stuff is public because it is called social media. And if somebody wants to take a shot, a stranger, a hater, someone from my past, I leave it up there. Whatever. That's your opinion. That's not going to ruin my day. That's just going to show me, you know, you've got nothing better to do than to try to bring me down to your level. And that's the way people look at the source. Like that saying says, most of the time, if somebody tries to pop on you, why are you going to get so offended? If it's not true, just laugh it off, man.
Yeah.
So don't let it ruin 1 minute, much less for some people, your day, days, and getting all bent and twisted over, you know, somebody that's probably in their parents' basement with their underoos on, you know, being the keyboard warrior.
Right.
Mike, seven-figure investor. We spoke about that last time. And I got to tell you, most people are on the sidelines because they think it's so hard. Now, with your system, I know you say business professionals, entrepreneurs.
Yep.
Can a guy like me become successful in less than a year doing real estate?
Yeah, totally. Here's the thing. So real estate or business in general, it's not an athletic event, right? If LeBron James, Michael Jordan, whoever, right, says, hey, I am a successful basketball player and I can teach you how to do it. I know they can't. I'm 5'8". They're not gonna be able to make me a successful in their field. They can't, right? Business is different. It's kind of the ultimate level playing field, to use that analogy. And so everyone can do it. And if you're going to be successful in something that everyone has a reasonably equal chance of being successful, the fastest way to do it is to model somebody who's already done it, right? You can do it in 12 months on your own. You'll have to be extremely lucky with certain guesses that you make about how to go about it. But if I tell you everyone sort of is starting in the same spot, relatively speaking, but I have this person who's done it, right? And they can show you how they did it. It's reasonable to assume you can do it too. It's like this. If I tell you, Omar, if I tell you I make a really great, great pizza, like I'm really good at making pizza, and you can see that I make pizza for you and it's delicious and you love it, it's reasonable to assume that I can teach you how to make really good pizza. It's a formula. It's just it's a recipe. I can tell you how to do it. I can tell you how long to have in the oven. I can tell you how much cheese. I can tell you everything that you need to know about how to do that. And you believe that, right? Well, that holds true in business. I have created a seven-figure business. I did it in 12 months. I know what, and by the way, I made mistakes that you won't make because I won't let you make them, right? I'm going to steer you around some of those things that even I did that was a mistake. But I modeled somebody else who told me what they did, and I just did the same thing. I made certain mistakes that they didn't make, and so they couldn't foresee the things that I was going to do dumb, right? The dumb things I did. But I can steer you around that. So if you believe I can teach you how to make a great pizza because I make great pizzas and I can show you how to do that, why would you not believe that I can also show you how to build the same business that I built? It is still a formula. And by the way, everyone doesn't want to build a seven-figure business. I understand that, right? I'm not trying to alienate people who say, listen, I love my job, or I don't need seven figures. I want to make a nice six-figure income. I just want a nice six-figure business. Well, imagine if someone who has a seven-figure business were to teach you how to build your six-figure business. It should be relatively simple. If I'm promising more than six figures, then six figures is going to happen along the way. And so I can help you get there too, but I have no interest in teaching someone how to create some business that requires them to work 80 hours a week. I've been doing this a while, but I can tell you, I don't spend more than a couple of hours a week in my real estate business. I just don't. I have other businesses and I have other endeavors. I have a podcast like you talked about. I wrote a book. Like, I have other things that I'm interested in that I do. I spend 1 to 2 hours a week in my real estate business, and it's a seven-figure business. That's because I am most, in addition to creating a seven-figure income for somebody, I am only interested in doing that if I can show you how to do it that allows you to pull yourself out, create automations, build a team so that you're not in it 24/7. I don't think most people want to leave their 9-to-5 job to work 12 hours a day, 7 days a week. That just isn't fun. People think it will be great, but it's not. It becomes a job, and I'm not interested in that. I'm teaching you how to build a team, put systems and processes in place so that you're running a legitimate business, right? You should not be pulling all the levers and pedaling and be on that hamster wheel all day long. That's not a good business, in my opinion. It's a great job. It's not a good business. So yeah, let's create that seven-figure business. You can certainly do it in a year. But again, it's hard to do it with victims, right? You got to shake that. Part of the beginning of the program is a little bit about mindset, I'll be honest, right? Most people want to skip over that part. But I had a conversation with Brandon Turner of Bigger Pockets. He's not the host of Bigger Pockets anymore, but he used to be. Had a conversation with him, and he agreed. We both were talking about it on my podcast. Your mental status, your mentality, the way that you look at the world has way more to do with success than a specific app or software or tool or strategy or marketing or whatever you're doing, right? All of that is part of the tools needed. But if you don't have the right mindset, if you don't look at the world the right way, if you don't have enough belief in yourself, it's tough. I've given people tools and they've not built the thing that I've given them tools to build because they needed it done for them. They had this mentality that nothing works. And if you believe you can't do it, you're 100% right. If you believe you can do it, you are 100% right. And I can show you how to do it. I have the map. I know where the landmines are. I know the things that will blow you off course. I know the things that will blow up your business and ruin everything. And I've got a map. And if you had to walk a minefield, you would much rather do it with a map, right? And so just get that map from somebody who has it. Get it from me. Get it from you. Get it from anybody. They don't come to me. But if they want to build that business, I'm happy to help them do it. Happy to help them do it. And I can absolutely do it. No doubt about it. I've done it for hundreds of people. Matter of fact, I need to update that and probably say over 1,000 because I've been saying hundreds for years. And so it's got to be well over 1,000 now. But it's hard to quantify sometimes because I help in ways like this. I don't know who I'm talking to right now in your podcast, but I you know, there's just been so many people that have proven the process over and over again that it's hard to deny.
Now, Mike, how much capital does someone need to start? A couple hundred K?
Oh God, no. To pay me or just in general? Like, forget
all
me.
All the above. All the above. The franchise fee. I'm a franchise. How much capital do I need to have?
So to be clear, I'm not a franchise in that. I don't know if you do this either, but you pay me once. Like, I don't need you to pay me on your deals or give me portions of it. None of that stuff. But it really depends, honestly, what kind of real estate you want to do. But I can tell you it's shockingly little. You can absolutely build a seven-figure business starting with $10,000 or less easily. And that most of that is not paying me. Most of that is to do some marketing and things in the beginning, right? I'm a big fan of reinvesting your profits. Like if somebody comes to me and says, I want to build this business, but every time they sell a house or every time they do a deal, they take that money and blow it on boats and cars and how, you know, it's probably going to fail, right? You have to reinvest some of the profits. So depending on how much profits they reinvest, somebody could start with less than $10,000 and absolutely do this. And depending on the kind of real estate they want to practice, with significant less than five, they could probably do it.
Really?
100%. I'm not that expensive. Honestly, I'm really not. But if you want to wholesale, we'll put it this way. If you want to flip houses, honestly, that's where you need the least amount of money. If you want to flip houses, I can show you how to do that virtually with no money to start. None, except what you pay me. Right? It's very easy to do. I taught my daughter to do it. This is the ultimate example. Who do I want to protect and see them be successful more than my own daughter? And so when my daughter came to me, and maybe this is like TMI, or maybe I shouldn't be giving this away for free on your program, but when my daughter came to me at age 24 and said, I want to do real estate. I don't want to do it full time. She's a social worker. She loves her job. Very passionate about her field, but she said, I want to create this other stream of income, and I don't know if I should wholesale, if I should have rentals, if I should do short-term rentals, if I should flip, what do I do? And I said, listen, you don't have a lot of money. You definitely don't have a lot of time. My suggestion is that you start by flipping houses. And people out there might be listening going, oh my gosh, that sounds like the hardest thing to do with, you need the most money, you need to buy the house, you need all this stuff. Here's the reality. She did her first three deals. She got them under contract within 3 weeks. Three deals, 3 weeks. Here's how she did it. She went out on my suggestion and got on every wholesaler's list in our market. Mine and everyone else's, all my competitors. And she started making tons of offers to wholesalers, right? She wasn't marketing. She wasn't spending money on marketing. A little bit of time to look at these deals and make offers. She made offers on every property that came across her desk. And she got three deals right away. The next step is to hire a contractor. And I always suggest, I don't care if you have all the time in the world or if you work 9 to 5, I believe that house flippers who want to scale their business need to use general contractors. Subbing it all out yourself may save you a few bucks, but the time and hassles involved are not worth it. And it's not scalable, in my opinion. So she went out and found a good general contractor who was able to handle the traffic, right? The traffic cop for the deal. And she went out and flipped three houses and made $60,000 on her first go around. Like, she didn't have to spend any money. She got the deal from wholesalers. She got the money from a hard money lender, lent her the money for the deal. And she made 60 grand, no money out of pocket. Like, it can be done. And the next step for her is to systemize and to create these processes and start hiring a team if she wants to scale up like that. If you want to do a couple deals a year, one or two deals a year, you don't have to build a team. You don't need all these systems and processes if you have a little bit of time. But if you want to do 10, 20, 30, 50, 100 flips a year, you've got to build a team or your bandwidth will be exceeded. You have to, right? And so I like teaching people how to scale. Scale to me is what's interesting. Doing one deal a year, I can't get excited about that. I just can't. It's hard. So I'm interested in scale. And when you start talking about scale, now I want to get my time back because like you, I'm similar age to you. Time means everything to me now. Everything. Everything. Because everything I say yes to, I have to say no to something else because it all takes time. And so I'm really interested in reducing my time and increasing my profits. That's 100% what I'm about. And most people will tell you flipping houses, wholesaling, short-term rentals, it's an active business. I totally disagree. Those can be passive. They can be as passive as anything if you build them properly. And when done properly, it's totally passive.
So it's all limiting beliefs that's holding everybody back. You see, I just had the popular notion that a lot of people, you're going to have a huge capital to start off. You answered something that was one of my limiting beliefs, and I'm sure the masses, because you know, you always, and I'm sure after aha, you gave us that aha, you said, no, it doesn't. Then the next thing, which you already answered too, is like, oh my gosh, that's going to take, you know, days and months, and this is a long process. And no, you said it best, it's all mindset, and that's what I love. You said the first thing that you tackle. And this is the first thing that's holding back everybody is ourselves, our thoughts, our minds, our beliefs.
100%. 100%. there's people that you look at out there and you go, how are they so successful? I can do that, right? It's because they totally believe in themselves. Sometimes it's belief in yourself or completely being naive about the challenges you're going to face, right? My daughter believed in herself, but maybe more importantly, she didn't have any reason to think she was going to fail. She's never tried it and failed, so she didn't have those scars. So she was almost too naive to fail. You know what I mean? She didn't know to be nervous about flipping three houses. She just didn't know to be. She had seen me do it, and so it just seemed like my dad does it. Like anybody can do it, right? Like she had this naive, optimistic way of looking at things. And people who have had failures in the past, they're sometimes the hardest ones to talk to because they just live in that failure. They believe that they're going to fail because they failed before. And so it starts with mindset. I don't really even want to coach anybody unless we can kind of talk through some of their limiting beliefs. We have to get rid of those so that I don't get second guessed on everything I tell them, right? I call them yeah butters. You know what I mean? You tell them something and they go, yeah, but like you said, yeah, but in my market, you can't do that. In my market, there are no deals. Yeah, but I can't raise money. Yeah, but. Right. It's always the yeah butters. It's like, stop yeah butting me and listen.
But it's crazy because you said it best. If you've never failed at it, you have no frame of reference. But our minds always go for failure is going to be our first option. We're going to fail. We're going to drown. We're going to get hurt. We're going to get crushed. That's what's holding people back. Oh my gosh, but Mike, I do this program. And I fail that. Well, you just said it best. You're focusing on it instead of having. You're right. That person that's like that. A person that's completely naive has a way better shot than the person that's cautious, that's afraid, that's fearful. That you know the boogeyman's going to jump out.
Yeah.
Since you know it's November 1st. Oh my gosh, Michael Myers and all these different people. Instead of just going with it. And you're right. All of us know people that are so successful and you're like, oh my gosh, that guy?
Yep.
That guy did it. And yep. It's like, okay, well then, yeah, if you're saying that guy and you keep on pointing in disbelief, then why can't you point that finger at yourself and go, yes, this guy can do it too then.
Yep, totally. You know who like has this unwavering belief in themselves? Kids, right? When kids start to walk, they fail so many times, sometimes tragically, but they keep trying because they just don't know that they should be worried about failure. And so they just keep getting up and keep trying to walk. Like we lose that as adults because, our boyfriend breaks up with us when we're 13 and then we don't get the job we wanted when we were 18 or, we fail a class in college. Like we have these little failures that happen that start training our brain to expect failure. Kids don't expect failure. They don't. They don't even know to expect failure. We sort of learn that as adults, and we have to unlearn that. We have to get used to the idea that failure doesn't mean we can't succeed the next time. And so sometimes that's the big thing. Sometimes it's just motivation. We talked about it earlier, right? If I had your kids hostage, and I said, you will do your first deal before you see your kids again, and if you don't get it done in the first year, you're not going to see them ever again, like they would get a deal. They would totally do it, right? Because their motivation would be greater than their fears. And so step one is usually finding the right motivation to be successful. If you don't have motivation to be successful, any excuse will derail you. Any excuse will derail you. That's the key.
Now, I love it. Like I said, we're like-minded people, only the second guest to ever come back. because, I mean, dude, we're almost at the hour point. Because when you connect with people, time goes by fast.
Totally.
It's when you're not in sync and you're like, oh my gosh, does it seem like an hour? And it's only 2 minutes in. So, man, I love your thoughts. I know you've got amazing kids because you have that mindset. So let's create more winners, Mike.
Okay.
How do they start the process? On becoming an owner of a seven-figure business. Because like you said, all you need to do is believe in yourself, switch that mindset, and just do it and be it. And how do we find you? All the above.
Yeah, pretty easy. So my podcast, you mentioned it, it's Just Start Real Estate. If you go to Just Start Real Estate, type it into Spotify, iTunes, whatever, you'll find me, easy enough. But most importantly, go to my website. It's MikeSimmons.com. So it's pretty straightforward, MikeSimmons.com. You can reach out to me there. I have some stuff free available. As a matter of fact, I'm giving away a free copy of my book to your audience. If you want to get a free digital copy, it's a download, you can go to MikeSimmons.com/free book and they can get a free copy of the book. I've got some other stuff there. You can get one-on-one coaching from me, or you can dive right into the program and start working on your business and get to the seven figures in 12 months. That's really what I'm focused on doing. But it all starts by going to my website, reaching out and engaging with me there.
Now, do you do like weekly mentor sessions, like through Zoom, through a group?
Yep.
Group setting?
Yep, we do some group stuff, and there's some one-on-one in there as well, and there's some community stuff. So there's definitely a program behind it, right? The backbone of it is the program, the course that I'm teaching. I'm taking you through the process step by step. But within that, there's a group aspect to it, and we do meet one-on-one throughout the course too. So you kind of get all of it. Sometimes people don't want to be like in a group setting, but what I have found is there's going to be questions and concerns and things brought up about people's businesses that you would have never thought of to ask, right? And so it's really important to engage with a group so that you get the benefit of everybody's questions and what I'm saying to everybody, right? Me having a conversation with you, Omar, about your business, that doesn't help someone who's not listening. So we want everyone to be together, but I know that some people need that one-on-one conversation too. And so we facilitate the one-on-one conversation, but the backbone of it is the program, the seven-figure investor program, where I walk you through like literally step-by-step what you need to put in place, the software, how to use it, all of it, right? Everything I do, everything I use to run my seven-figure business is there for you. I give it all to you.
It's because you're in abundance, brother, and you want to see people win. Heck, don't be surprised, Mike, if you see me joining your course, because who doesn't want a seven-figure business, man?
Totally. I totally agree. And you're right. When you talk about abundance, here's the craziest part. A lot of people see people in their market as competitors. I have personally taught about 24 people in my market how to run the same business I'm running. Like, I've given them all my tools. I've given them my playbook. They're in my market, right? That's abundance. I don't see competition. I don't. I know that there's enough out there for everybody. It's not a zero-sum game. You getting a deal doesn't take a deal off my plate. So you're right. I give it all away, everything. And if I don't have it or I don't use it in my business for some reason and you want it, I'll figure out how to get it to you. That, like, literally anything you need, I'll figure out how to get it to you. But I know that I've got enough because I've taught hundreds of people to do it with what I'm going to give you. So, but we'll figure it out. It's not this like business in a box where here you go, it's all you get, and good luck to you, right? It's a little bit more personalized than that. I want to make sure that you have everything you need.
Awesome. One final question for you, Mike. What, any imparting words to that person sitting on the sidelines, maybe real estate, maybe success? They just haven't taken any chances. They're watching life go by. They're watching days go by.
Yep. So here's something I heard recently, and I said this on stage a couple weeks ago when I was giving a presentation. Here's the thing. None of us get out of this life alive. We're all going to die someday. Unfortunately, that's the end of the story for everybody, right? Nobody lives forever. So if you're going to die someday, you've got a choice. You can die in the bleachers watching the game, or you can die on the field playing the game. I choose to die on the field. I'm scared to death of dying in the bleachers, right? We've only got this one life. We got one opportunity. You can either watch other people succeed, you can either watch other people living their life, or you can get down there and play the game as well. Now, I take it a step further. I choose to play offense. I'll die playing offense. I'm not going to play defense. I'm not going to worry about the what ifs. I'm not going to complain about the economy or the president or any of that. I go out there and get it. I go out there and get what I want and get what I want out of life. And dying in the bleachers to me is sad. And so you've got that choice, right? If it is going to end the same way for everybody, you might as well get down on the field and play. Otherwise, you know, you just can't, you can't complain if you're not helping yourself. So get off the bleachers, get down on the field. Let's go.
Amen, brother. Everybody, MikeSimmons.com. crazy not to do it.
It's so crazy.
And like I said, there is a reason why I brought him back. Like-minded people. He wants to see you win. He doesn't check people to see their pockets. In fact, he wants everybody's pockets full. Win-win. That's the only way to live life. Brother, thank you for being in service. Thank you for the opportunity. And more importantly, thank you for coming back on my show, man.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me back. I like knowing that I'm one of the only twofers that you've had. So that's good to know. I appreciate that.
No problem, brother. And like I said, I truly mean that. Don't be shocked if within the next month or so you see me joining.
Right. Let's do it. Let's make it happen.
For sure, brother. All righty, man. Thank you for everything.
Thanks, man.
All right. Every day I'm thinking like, what if it did work? What if you took action and made it happen and started living inside of your purpose? What if it did work? Right now you can make the choice to never listen to that negative voice no more. The hardest prison to escape is our own mind. I was trapped inside that prison for a long time. To make it happen, you gotta take action. Just imagine, what if it did work?